Hi, I'm Connor, and this is episode 5 of Learn English with Everest, a podcast where I chat to native English speakers in real, unscripted English, and then, step by step, explore the language used. This episode is going to be the first in a 4-part series about English for work and business. CVs, job interviews, phone and email English, chatting to clients, customers, colleagues. We'll be looking at lots of different areas over the next 4 episodes, with all the usual vocabulary, grammar, listening practice, and lots more. This week, I chatted to Rob about the very first thing you need to do if you're going to get a job, which is to make a great CV or resume. It's not easy to make a good CV, especially when you're trying to get a job that isn't in your native language. So, in this episode, Rob and I have a chat about 10 tips to help you create the perfect CV. Both Rob and I have made lots of CVs ourselves over the years, and Rob hires teachers and admin staff for the school, and so he has considered lots and lots of CVs, both very good and very bad. And in my last job as the academic manager of a language school, I hired dozens of teachers, and I also read hundreds and hundreds of CVs. So between us, we have a good idea of what makes a good CV, and we want to share that with you. So let's get to the interview. Along the way, I'll explain lots of the vocabulary, the idioms, phrasal verbs, and other expressions that we use. But don't forget that all the material, including today's 10 tips, are on the website at everestlanguageschool.com/podcast. So that's everestlanguageschool.com/podcast. So we're going to start with tip number 1, which is tailor your CV. So to tailor is to make something specifically for a purpose. So it's the same word that we use for someone who makes suits, like men's clothing. So if you buy a suit in a shop, then you get the one that fits you as well as it can. But if you go to a tailor, then they make the suit exactly to your measurements. They tailor it. So to tailor something is to make it specifically for a purpose. Number 1 then is tailoring your CV. So I guess we shouldn't be talking about making a CV. We should be talking about making lots of CVs, that you have a template where, I don't know, maybe 80, 90% of the CV is the same every time. But you should definitely be changing the last 10 or 15%, or it's very obvious that it's generic, that it's trying to be suitable for every job, but is actually suitable for no job. So what kind of things would you think then, what would you need to do to tailor your CV?
I suppose a lot of people, when they're looking for a job, they have lots of different experience. Maybe they worked in different cafes, they worked in an office at some stage, they worked on, I don't know, reception somewhere, different things throughout their career. And if you're then going for a job in a cafe, it doesn't really make sense to go into detail about all the technical things that you had to do when you're working in an office. So maybe it would make more sense to focus on, you know, times when you were working in cafes or restaurants or something similar to the type of work you're looking for. And then if you're looking for a more kind of career-based professional thing, you know, maybe when your English is a bit better, you then would leave out the things like working in a cafe. So it wouldn't make sense to list off all the you know, summer jobs you had here and there, and it would make more sense to focus on some more details from your career.
So that's number 1, tailor your CV. So maybe number 2 then is don't waffle. If you don't know this word, to waffle, what does to waffle mean?
So waffle is to just go on and on and on and on and on and give more details than people need to know. So I think it's really important when you're writing your CV to try and make it punchy, to the point, and, you know, to get across the important information in as kind of short and clear a way as you possibly can.
Yeah. I mean, I think if someone is reading your CV, they are going to give it a quick glance. They may spend 10 seconds, if you're lucky, looking at your CV. And then if they're interested, they're going to read a little bit more. But they don't need long 4 or 5 sentences about each job. Like, that's just too much information. And they can ask you about that in the interview anyway. So, you know, the difference between a hotel receptionist job where you say, In my last job, I met new guests when they arrived at the hotel and I checked them into their room, which is obviously very, very long. You could just write, you know, greeted and checked in new guests or something. Exactly the same amount of information, but much, much shorter. So don't waffle. Yeah. So that's number two.
So number two was don't waffle. That's W-A-F-F-L-E. So waffles, you may also know as a type of food. If you know Belgian waffles, they're so good. Here, though, it means to keep talking and not get to the point, to say what you need to say. Rob said your CV should be punchy, so it should make an impact, make an impression. To punch somebody is to hit them with your closed fist. So if something is punchy, it really makes an impression. The employer says, okay, wow, this person looks great. So I also use the expression to give something a glance. So a glance is a very short look. So you want your potential employer not just to glance at your CV, but obviously to really read it.
Number three is maybe to keep your CV up to date and keep it accurate. It's easy maybe to forget that you've done some amazing things and put them on your CV.
It's really important to keep it up to date. So if I get in a CV and I'm looking at it and if there is, I don't know, like it's up to date until 2017 and then 2018 and the first half of this year are missing the information that should be there, it looks a little bit strange.
Yeah, I think maybe one thing you should definitely bear in mind is that potential employers are just not going to give you the benefit of the doubt. If something is missing or something is not there, they're just going to assume there was a problem. Or, you know, if you have job work experience for 2014, 2015, 2017, 2018, 2019, the person's going to be like, what were you doing in 2016? So, you know, you need to make sure there are no suspicious gaps, which may be perfectly innocent. Maybe you weren't in prison, but maybe you were. Don't leave any gaps. Keep it up to date. Keep it accurate. And don't create a reason for the employer to rule you out, to take your name out of the running because there's sort of a strange two-year gap in your CV or something like that.
Yeah, and also to make sure that everything on it is accurate. So, you know, if you're putting links to your online profiles, like your LinkedIn or something like that, that should match up with your CV. So, you know, your employment history should be correct there as well. And just generally keeping everything clear and accurate on the CV is really important because it's kind of showing what type of employee you're going to be. So if there's mistakes in the dates or things don't line up properly, that doesn't give a great first impression.
And what about things like, you know, online versions of CVs or personal websites? You know, a lot of people use, you know, their name .me or .me or whatever, and kind of have an online profile. Do you think that's particularly important? Or
I wouldn't say it's hugely important, but I suppose it depends on the type of job you're going for. Again, if the job involves maybe some work online or doing updating social media profiles or that kind of thing, showing that you know how to manage a website, I think would definitely be beneficial.
And so I think any place you can show you have extra skills that other people don't have is important because everybody who's applying for a job is and who's likely to be successful is going to meet the basic requirements. So you're kind of looking for things that say you have a little bit extra or a little bit more or something. That's number three. Number four is to make your CV, double check your CV, triple check your CV, and then get somebody else or several other people, especially a native speaker, to take a look at your CV as well. How many CVs have you got over the years with spelling mistakes and grammar mistakes and things like that?
More than you would believe, considering I'm generally hiring English language teachers. We get in CVs, we don't hire these teachers generally, that will have spelling mistakes or, you know, grammatical errors or, yeah, it does happen very often, but especially, you know, non-native English speakers sending in CVs for maybe admin jobs or that kind of thing. Sometimes it's very clear that they haven't asked somebody to look over it. They haven't got a native speaker to check it for them. So I'd absolutely recommend, you know, in the school, generally, it's no problem to ask your teacher to have a look at your CV, or students can bring it down to reception and we'll check it for them. But yeah, always get somebody to read over it. Even if you're a native speaker, you should do that. Usually we'd get for one job, you could get 100 CVs. And the first thing we're trying to do is to whittle them down and to come up with a smaller number of CVs that we have to then look through in more detail. So we're trying to rule people out straight away. So if we're seeing, you know, big mistakes and errors straight away when we look at the CV, we're not going to probably give those people a call.
Yeah, I mean, it's actually great if you're an employer and you get lots of applications. If half of them have mistakes, then you're like, okay, brilliant. Then I don't even have to bother with that, half. Instead of having to read through 50 CVs, I can just read through 25 well-written CVs and choose from them.
So in this section, I said to bear in mind, to bear something in mind. This means to consider it or to remember something while somebody else is speaking. So, for example, I might say at a business meeting, I'll give you a summary of the project, but please bear in mind it's not finished yet. So, you know, remember this while I'm talking. And I also use the expression to give somebody the benefit of the doubt. The benefit of the doubt. So if you give someone the benefit of the doubt, there might be a positive reason or a negative reason, but you assume the positive reason. So maybe you're late for a meeting and your boss can either think, oh, this person is always late and start the meeting without you. Or maybe they say, okay, well, look, I'll give them the benefit of the doubt. Maybe they're stuck in really bad traffic and we'll wait a few more minutes or something like that. So Rob and I also talked about how employers reduce the number of people that they consider, how they go from, you know, 100 CVs to the 10 best CVs. Rob said that they need to whittle down the numbers. So to whittle down is a phrasal verb meaning to reduce the number. If you remove 90 candidates, say, you go from 100 to 10, then you are ruling out 90 candidates. So to rule out is to exclude, to take out of consideration. You can use to rule in as well. To rule in is to include. So as Rob mentioned, you need to give or make a good first impression with your CV so you won't be ruled out. To make an impression, to make a good first impression is to, you know, make somebody go, okay, wow, this person looks great as soon as they read your CV or as soon as they meet you. You want to make a good impression. So moving on to number five.
Put a short profile on the top of your CV. You know, I think a lot of very strong CVs have just a few bullet points or a single little box with a few sentences in it. Just a very concise, sort of well-written profile, a summary of who you are and what you do. Do you think that's something that a lot of people do or should do, or what do you reckon?
Generally, everybody does it. But a lot of the time they're, yeah, just very generic again and not too interesting. I think, yeah, exactly what you said. I think it should be similar to, you know, we're not going to look today in too much detail at cover letters, but a cover letter should do a similar sort of thing of quickly highlighting what are the important aspects of your CV. A profile should do that in an even more concise way, just to get across the kind of key information about you and why you're good for this job, and also, you know, suggesting why you're interested in the job. But you don't want it to be too wishy-washy either.
Yeah, I think you could maybe think of it as if you went for a job interview for this job, and instead of doing an interview, the interviewer said, why should I hire you in 15 seconds? And you're just like, oh, okay, because of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And, you know, they're the kind of like the big things.
Yeah,
it's like
your elevator pitch.
Yeah, exactly. So I think that's really important. And plus, if you are an employer, so, you know, I was in the same boat in my last job. I was hiring lots and lots of teachers. And, you know, the first thing you look for is this CV error-free and looks nice and, you know, it kind of it doesn't have any obvious mistakes. The second thing is just to take a quick look at the profile. And if it's like, oh, okay, that's interesting, or I want to read more, it's like,
You know, maybe like the blurb on the back of a book or something. It's like, it just a couple of sentences, and on that basis, you decide, yes, I want to read more about this person, or, oh, no, next, and you move on to the next one. So that's number five, put a profile on your CV. Number six is try to give useful information, useful numbers. You know, don't be sort of vague about things that you've done. So if you're looking for a marketing job and you say something like, I increased the company's social media following, like, this doesn't really mean a huge amount because you don't know by how much you increased it. You don't really know which social media things you're talking about. You know, there's no context. So if you give a little bit more information, you know, over the first 6 months of my job, I increased the company's Twitter and Facebook following by 45%, double the previous year's growth. Then there's like loads of information there. It's which social media, by how much, whether this was a good thing. And it gives real information to the potential employer. If that's the kind of thing that they're looking for, the kind of job that it is, I think being vague is nearly worse than saying nothing.
Yeah, absolutely. Because if you're being vague, it gives a sense that you don't really know what you're talking about. Maybe you're inventing things for your CV, as people tend to do. So yeah, no, I think it's important to give some metrics of what you did so they can get a real sense both of the work that you did and the fact that you really understand what you're talking about.
Yeah, because I think as well, like, if you, like you say, if you're very vague, it can sound sort of elusive that maybe you're lying, which is number seven on our list. Don't lie. So
we'll come back to lying in a second. First, though, let's have a look at a few of the expressions. Rob used an English word I love, the word wishy-washy. So it means that something isn't clear. I also use the word vague, which has the same meaning. So your CV should definitely not be vague or wishy-washy. Rob also talked about an elevator pitch. So this is the idea of explaining your idea to someone in the time it takes you to take an elevator. So, you know, to go from the ground floor to the 10th floor, you need to explain your idea really quickly. And this is a pitch. So a pitch is a business proposal. You can pitch an idea to someone if you explain it and you try to convince them to support you or to invest in your idea. Finally, I use the idiom, everyone is in the same boat. So maybe you have a similar idiom in your language, but if everyone is in the same boat, then everyone is in the same situation, in the same circumstances. If I succeed, we all succeed. If you fail, we all fail. You know, if the boat sinks, we all drown. I also talked about a blurb, B-L-U-R-B. So a blurb is a short summary or synopsis on the back of a book. You know, if you go to a bookshop and you think, will I read this book or not? You read the couple of sentences at the back of the book. This is a blurb. Okay, so number seven, don't lie. You might massage the truth, a euphemism we sometimes use for a small lie. And you should definitely talk yourself up. So if you talk somebody up, you highlight the positive things about someone. You can talk yourself up or you can talk your skills up. Make your skills prominent, make them positive.
I think everybody, there are lots of alternative words for lying, like, you know, massaging the truth. But yeah, I don't think you should lie in your CV, but you can maybe decide where the line is.
Absolutely, yeah. Like, I think that thing of that a lot of the students, they come here with maybe in their own country have a great amount of experience, and then they're trying to look for a job in a cafe. So, you know, if you don't have that much experience working in cafes, you might need to massage the truth a little bit. So, you know, if you worked in a bar before or something like that and you used to make coffees, you could maybe change that to say that you worked in a cafe if you're looking for a job in a cafe now. But you want to be careful as well. You don't want to say that you're a professional barista and then you get put in front of a coffee machine and you don't know how to make a flat white. So, you know, there's a line.
Yeah. I think as well, especially for jobs in the service industry, a lot of people are looking for jobs in bars, cafes, restaurants, that sort of thing. You know, almost everybody has, most people have a job in the past that they have had customer experience with, or, you know, something like that, that you can sort of talk it up. I think maybe talk up your experiences rather than lying about them. And I think then that sort of leads on to number eight, which is to talk up your other skills, your relevant skills. So I think maybe the key word here is relevant.
So yeah, you want to, when you're writing your CV, to again just keep thinking back to what is this person looking for? You know, what type of person are they looking for? So, you know, if you're, let's go back to the coffee shop. If you're looking for a job in a coffee shop and you're talking about how much you love reading or that sort of thing, it's not really going to be relevant to that particular job. So is it really worth putting on the CV? You kind of, yeah, you have to keep thinking back to who's reading it and what they want to see.
Yeah, I think that's another important point. Like, is it worth putting on? Because a CV, didn't really mention this, but a CV should be short. I mean, one page for a lot of jobs like cafes, bars, maybe two pages. It might be a little bit longer if it's a more professional job, but generally speaking, you're talking like a single A4 page front and back for most jobs. And if you have limited space, then everything you put on is something that else that you can't put on. So I love reading, going to the cinema and taking long walks on the beach. Is like, that's a whole line that could be something much more relevant to your to your job.
They're vaguely interesting. We've gotten CVs from people who tell us that they like watching videos on YouTube and going on Facebook.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah. They're like, okay, next. But then I think if you do have skills, I think a lot of people maybe overlook the interesting kind of unique skills that they do have that they may not kind of realize how relevant they are. Like you mentioned earlier, you know, showing somebody that you have your own personal website, which you have made, demonstrates that you can make websites, which is a good skill. So if you write, I love reading on your CV, that's probably not going to be very useful unless you're like looking for a job in a bookshop or something. And then in that case, don't just write, I love reading. Kind of explain what type of books you read and how you are part of a book club and you always write online reviews of stuff. And, you know, kind of something that'll make you stand out, something that's, if not unique, at least different from probably most of the other applicants or something like that.
Definitely, yeah. And, you know, when we're getting in CVs from teachers, you know, if in their interests they put down that they're interested in learning other languages, so they've set up, you know, meetup groups for language exchanges and that kind of thing, they're the type of people that we're interested in talking to because they really care about this type of work. So, you know, yeah, anything to show a little bit of your personality, but that is relevant to the job, is really going to help you.
And yeah, I think the best way to not stand out is to pack your CV with cliched, meaningless phrases like, I'm a real team player, and this sort of thing. Again, it's just wasting space.
Yeah, and this is something that, you know, a lot of students learn when they're, you know, in a standard course book that they might have. These are the type of phrases they'll hear, you know, I'm a good team player, good communicator, an outgoing person, all these sort of things. But if they're not really relevant to you, don't just pack them in, because it's the same thing that everybody's putting on their CV. And it's like, you know, there's limited real estate on your CV, as you were saying before. So, you know, use it well.
Yeah, and as well, it might be true. Maybe you really are a great communicator, but that can be something that you can explain in an interview, why that's the case or how that's the case. But if not, it's just a meaningless phrase that's going to be on everything, you know.
Exactly.
Nobody would describe themselves as a bad team player. You know, every job, more or less, requires you to work with other people. So it's just not that weird. So there are other things that potential employers look for as well. One of them, I think, is this idea of everybody saying that they require fluent English, which I think is mostly quite ridiculous. So number 9, I think, would be don't be put off by employers looking for supposedly fluent English.
Okay, so let's take a look at a few of the words used in number 7 and 8. We talked about whether something is worth putting on your CV. So don't forget that we say it's worth it or it's not worth it. You know, it's a good thing to do. If you spend time doing something and you enjoy it, then it's worth it. We use worth very commonly with it, or we use it with ing. It's worth doing. It's worth seeing. You know, what did you think of the film? Oh, it was great. It's really worth seeing. We also talked about standing out. So the phrasal verb to stand out is to become obvious or prominent or noticeable. So you want to stand out in a job application so people remember you. To overlook something is to neglect or forget to include something. So
You have the phrasal verb to look over, which means to check something or review something. So you might look over an important email before you send it. But to overlook is to forget to include something. So maybe you want to get a promotion in your job and there are three possible people and your boss overlooks you. So she doesn't even consider you for the job. She only thinks about the other two people. So you have been overlooked. So we're on to the last two tips. Number 9 is to not be put off by employers looking for fluent English. So this is the phrasal verb to be put off, to be discouraged or persuaded not to do something. So, you know, a new job might be very hard, but don't be put off. Keep trying and it'll be okay in the end. Don't be discouraged. Don't be put off.
A big part of this could come down to a lot of employers don't really know how to describe what levels of English are. So fluent English to them might mean just being able to understand basic instructions. So, you know, if it's a job in a kitchen, in a restaurant or that kind of thing, and they're asking for fluent English, probably if you have a B1, B2 level of English, you're going to be completely fine. Probably an A2 level of English would be fine for that type of job. So don't let it stop you, you know.
Yeah, I would just like look into it a little bit, try and find out what kind of tasks will you be required to do and to understand in English. And yeah, if it's a kitchen porter job, you're not going to need a huge amount. If it's a waiting job, you'll need a little bit more. But like if you have B1, B2 level of English and you're kind of confident, you can, you know, talk the talk, then you're mostly going to be fine. And employers, in fairness, when they get to the interview stage, can assess fairly quickly. If you don't understand the questions that they are asking you in the interview, you're not going to understand the questions that the customers are going to ask you. But I think sometimes people look at job advertisements and say, oh, I don't know, I only have intermediate English, but this says that you need to have fluent English. And yeah, I think, like you say, it can be a problem with, which is perfectly understandable, people who don't work or study in the English language sector don't always understand these terms like B1, B2, and what is upper intermediate and so on, which, you know, so you need to teach them.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah, fluent can mean different things for different jobs. So yeah, as you were saying, just I normally would tell students just to go for it, you know, apply for the job anyway. And when you get to the interview, you'll quickly find out if your level is good enough or not. And if your English isn't good enough yet for the job, going to the interview anyway is a great way to practice your English.
So don't worry about your level. As Rob says, you should go for it, to go for it, to give something a try. And the last tip we have for you today is about the layout, how things look on the page. So to lay something out is to organize it, to put everything in the right position. Your CV needs a good layout, a good design.
Yeah, I think this is really important because, you know, employers do judge a book by its cover in terms of when they get a CV, they immediately get an impression, even before they read the profile or any of the details on the CV. If it looks good, it's got a better chance of, you know, getting through the first round. So yeah, like I think when you've kind of got all the information down that you want to include, then you need to start thinking about the layout and, you know, how to present the information in the clearest way, but also the most beautiful way that you possibly can. Because, you know, it will count against you if the CV is ugly, or, you know, if you're looking for a job in an office and you're going to be preparing documents as part of your job or sending out emails as part of your job. If your CV looks messy and, you know, badly organized, you're not going to get the call. Now there's, you know, there's really no excuse. You know, things like if you're using Word, they have templates that you can use to make your CV look better. Same if you're using Google Docs, they have CV templates. If you want to make it, you know, if you're going for a job where maybe it's working online or social media, that kind of thing, there's websites like Canva where there's, you know, beautiful layouts for CVs. So, you know, you should make the effort there as well. You know, there's no point in preparing a CV and spending all that time and then not thinking about the formatting.
So make your CV beautiful. A bad CV will count against you. If something counts against you, it's a negative thing for you. We talked about worth plus ing earlier, and here we had another one of these expressions. There's no point in doing something. So there's no point in doing with ing. We don't always use the preposition. We sometimes just say there's no point doing that or there's no point in doing that. It's the same thing. But don't forget that for all verbs, if you have a preposition followed by a verb, then the verb is always ing. It's always the gerund. There's no point in doing something. I look forward to meeting you. I'm interested in going there, and so on. So there are lots of hurdles, lots of obstacles to making a good CV. But hopefully these tips have helped you.
And then finally, if you've kind of got over all of those hurdles, then they're going to properly consider the CV and call you and hire you and give you an amazing job. Yeah. As long as you do a good interview, which we will be talking about.
Yeah, and just be prepared for that phone call. Have all your vocabulary and phrases ready.
Yeah, that's the thing that most students fear the most is the phone call. Yeah. It's to get from, we saw your CV and we loved it and we'd like you to have you in for interview. And then you're on the other end of the phone going, what did he just say? Yeah. Or something like that. So yeah, be prepared for the call. So that's amazing. I think we've got loads of stuff there.
Great.
All right. Thanks, Rob.
So there you have it. This week we had lots of vocabulary, lots of idioms, lots of phrasal verbs, lots of words you might use in a business and work context to tailor something, a punchy CV, to rule someone out, to stand out, to be put off, a layout, and lots of other words. And all of this vocabulary is on the website. So if you head to everestlanguageschool.com/podcast, you can have a look. And that's it. Thank you so much for listening, and I'll be back in 2 weeks with another episode of Learn English with Everest, which will be part two of this Business English mini-series. Special thanks to my guest, Rob McComish, and thanks also to Nouveau Noise, who provided the theme music for the show. You can check out their music on Spotify or Bandcamp, and there's a link on the website as well. If you like the show, we would love if you told your friends. Everest is on Twitter, on Facebook, on Instagram. So yeah, tell somebody you know if they're looking to learn some English, and get in touch. Let us know if you like the show. And that's it. Thanks. I'll see you in 2 weeks for episode 6.